Moyo, the acting chief executive officer. Then you have got Rasi Barnard, the chief financial officer, Joe Engelbrecht, is it spelled correctly? General manager operations and productions, Michelle Modise, chief director human resources, Elana Grobler, and then chief director financial manager. And that's a delegation that we expect that is here, and I hope all of them are here. Then we'll hear from the CEO whether all of them are here, but it looks like they have done us a good thing to come and to grace this occasion. And then, if you are ready, you can proceed to take us. You were here yesterday, you have heard what we have said, and then that will be some of the points of emphasis. You have been regarded as the high-performing institution, but there is a regress, but not in terms of the quality of your financial statements. I think they are intact and then without any material misstatements, which we appreciate to sustain that. But we expect to hear on those things that the Auditor General is worried about. What is it that you are doing and why they happen, and what is it that you are going to do moving forward? Thank you. You may proceed if you are ready.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. I will be leading the presentation for government printing works, assisted by the CFO, as well as the members of the ExCo of GPW. The presentation covers the legislative mandate and the strategic outlook in terms of the vision and our mission and our values, the situational analysis, the objective, strategic objectives, key projects, production statistics and performance information, as well as finance. Nothing has changed, Honorable Chair, with regard to our legislative mandate. Our vision remains the same, as to be the state's mandated security printer, and our mission being to provide cost-effective, reliable, timely services in security printing to all spheres of government, to provide the public with valuable information, and lastly, to disseminate government information through technology, innovation, and service excellence. And those are our values: reliability, integrity, accuracy, and stakeholder satisfaction. In terms of situational analysis, GPW has completed the transformation process from a government component, which started in 2009, so we can safely say what was set out for that transformation was achieved. Currently, our revenue has doubled and exceeds 1 billion. GPW has had a number of unqualified audits, and in the past financial year, we got a clean audit, and sadly, we have regressed this year and gone back to unqualified audits. And we will get into the details of what were some of the issues that has made us to be in that position. We have achieved our vision of being the security printer of choice, although we still need to enshrine this in legislation. At the moment, the various spheres of government are still procuring security material from private companies, so we are currently working on the state printers bill that will assist us to deal with that matter. And the conversion of government printing works from government component into a state-owned entity is currently underway. The draft bill has been concluded, is currently with the Deputy Minister for her own legal input before it goes through. So we do think that in terms of the legislative program of Home Affairs, we will meet the plan of making sure it comes to Parliament in 2017. The profits that GPW has done are being plugged back into the new equipment and renovation of Visage Street. GPW supports objectives set out in the NDP, particularly in terms of building a capable state and a developmental state. Through clear governance structures and stable leadership, government component continues to be committed to achieving this potential. GPW's financial viability is dependent on the ability to generate revenue from services that we render. As members would remember that in the last 3 years, GPW has not received any financial injection from Treasury. It's all being self-sustainability based on services that we provide and revenue received. Although GPW can report on increased output, service delivery does get negatively affected, particularly in terms of the skills and the human resources that we require on specialized skills, not on all the areas, particularly around technical artisans and in our IT, the lack of experience and qualified staff. Senior management has in some way had some negative input in us achieving all our targets. In terms of our strategic outcome, we had three. One was to relating to the state-owned companies to further develop the government company to become a state-owned company. The second one was to optimize processes and facilities, which is linked to the asset recapitalization. It's linked to building Visage Street, as well as building the dispatch section, which was also based in Visage. The third one relates to a developed workforce, which is about ensuring that GPW has got the relevant skills that we require in order for us to perform our mandate, which is to print government, both security and non-security documentation. With regard to key projects that we have, we continue to print smart ID cards, with over 2 million being produced in the financial year under review. Business transformation in terms of ICT to ensure that we automize and modernize our own processes is underway. The project, the Visage Street project, which is over 8 million, is underway as well. We have done just over 50% of what was targeted. Renovation of Pavilion 3 is also underway, which is where the examination printing and dispatch section will be. You'll remember, members, that currently the examination printing factory is at Bosman Street, and the plan was to consolidate all the function and operations of GPW into one center and automate and modernize the system. The migration of some of the employees that we don't need at Bosman Street, we are currently consolidating them into that whole precinct to make sure that there's one organization. At the moment, with people being in different buildings, it almost feels like there are two organizations, but we are working on doing, on consolidating that. And the issue around training, making sure that our staff are trained, making sure we develop our human capital is also underway, considering that both Bosman and Visage Street are almost permanent construction sites. We have to make sure that the employees are safe and are taken care there. The next slide, Honorable Chair, gives you a picture of what Visage precinct will look like once is completed. The next slide gives you the view from another angle, which is coming from the Kosimampuru prison. I'm sure members have seen this picture, so I'm not going to go into details about it. And the last slide gives you a picture of how GPW will look once all the different precincts have been aligned together and the construction is completed, which therefore means that GPW will be in one building and all the operational systems from printing of IDs, passports, gazettes, exam will all happen in one sense and all the systems can be incorporated together. In terms of production, Honorable Chair, I must mention that GPW has got four branches. The first branch deals with production, the second one with strategic management, the third with HR, and the fourth being finance. I'm now going to take you through performance of the branch that deals with production and operations. In the financial year under review, 820 passports have been produced. ID books, 545. You will notice there's a decline of that amount of ID books from the 3-4 years before then, because of the automation of the GPW and the production of the smart card IDs. So we are working on Home Affairs' targets to reduce the issuance of green ID book into smart cards. The number of ID cards you will see has gone up at 2 million, and we continue to do what we can to make sure that the targets that Home Affairs has set for themselves, we produce. Examination books, 15 million gazettes as well as published. So we have been increasing the amount of production over the years. When it comes to financial matters, and Chair, I'm going to take you through the presentation, but the CFO will come in on issues that he might need to add. Revenue, you could see it's over 1 billion. Our cost of sales, the profit there, you'll see it has moved from 200 in 2013-14 to 400 in 14-15 to 505 in 15-16. Our operating expenses are increasing, going up. It's also because of the work we're doing on the asset recapitalization program. And our profit for the year is standing at 383. On the next slide, the bank cash 1.4 for this current financial year, and with our trade payables, they share 202. The next slide speaks to issues relating to irregular expenditure. The AG yesterday raised or reported on things, concerns that they've had with regard to GPW, and the amount that we had to declare is of 32 million, which relates to a number of things which the CFO will speak to now. The first issue of 24 million relates to the pavilion, the construction in Pavilion 3, where similarly to the IEC, we seem to be struggling on the issue of interpretation of the PFMA with the AG. We have had engagements with them, numerous ones. We've had engagement with Treasury. At this point, Chair, we have begun the process of requesting Treasury to condone this particular expenditure. The concern that they are raising is that the contractor that has been given the work to do, we were not able to produce proof that we have verified that their subcontractors will not exceed the percentage that is required by law. Therefore, they then gave a 0% to the current constructor and gave 9 points to what was number two and number three. And we have raised the concern that if we have not verified on number one, we have not verified on number two and three, how did they reach a point of giving number two and 3 points? So we continue to engage them on that. The implications of this particular one, Honorable Chair, is that this is a project that's going to run until 2019-2020. So if the issue remains, it means for the next 3 years, we should be expecting a regular expenditure on this one because they'll continue to report on it. However, we are continuing to engage with AG and Treasury to deal with this matter. The other issues relates to goods not procured through competitive bidding, which is where goods were procured without following the supply chain process of three codes, which is the same issue that the committee had raised as a matter of concern, where we have Chair, I should say that PFMA does allow for deviation with motivation. And in this case, there were incidents that where we have found that we can't do the three codes, and the accounting officer, who is the CEO, did approve the deviation. But the AG's point is that the motivation is not sufficient. for that, then it became a... So we do acknowledge, Chair, that we have to tighten up a few things in terms of supply chain and in terms of procurement in GPW to make sure that some of these compliance matters that can be avoided are avoided. In terms of our demographic transformation, we have 558 personnel, with 49% being male, 53% being male and 47% being female, and those are the percentage in terms of the demographic, 69% African, 25% white, 4% colored, and Indian 2%. Chair, I must say that we through the leadership of the GMHR, we are working and making sure that the issues of equality are being attended to as we recruit staff that comes into GPW. In terms of performance information, Chair, GPW had 23 targets, and we have, 26 targets. We have achieved 23 of the 26, so there are three targets where we fall short. When it comes to production and operations, all the targets have been met of procuring the four new equipment according to the recapitalization plan. We've actually exceeded and procured five. We have done 100% of the IDs that we're meant to produce. We've done 100% of the passports that we're meant to produce, and in terms of the examination scripts that we deliver, particularly to Limpopo province, that's the only province that we do the examination paper. We have resolved as ESCO that we need to begin to engage the different provinces to make sure that they can make use of the state facility that is available to them. With regard to branch strategic management, the targets of ensuring that we have 99% of security vulnerabilities, we have actually achieved 100% of that. When it comes to availability of ICT, we have also exceeded the target that was put there with a few margins. With regard to development and implementation of the e-Gazette system, which is working very well and saving a lot of paper, we've also achieved the target that was set out. Still under the same branch, strategic management, with regard to GPW maximizing use of platforms in order to ensure that GPW is known that it exists as a state printer and that departments throughout the spheres of government are able to utilize the services, we've achieved that. With regard to security products that are being developed, we've achieved our targets there. We do some of the projects that were developed in the current financial year is the voucher for the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, the certificate for DET CETA. There are other departments that have now come, like the police service, social development, that have come in for us to be able to assist them with their own security documents. With regard to implementation of the risk security risk management system, Chair, we have not achieved this particular target, and the system was approved, or the plan was approved, but never implemented. The implementation only started in the current financial year, which will be part of our report when we report in next year. We have since, Chair, must say that brought on board the Director of Security Management. For the last two financial years, I think we did not have the head of security. There's been acting people. We have somebody now who has jumped into the job, who has made sure that some of the things that did not exist in terms of security management and risk management in this area are attended to. In terms of the annual internal audit plan, we've exceeded the target. Target was 85, we performed at 94. And Chair, I should indicate that we do have an internal audit unit that is fully functional and well capacitated, and does play its role in terms of interrogating some of the things that are being performed in the different business unit. An internal audit reports directly to the office of the CEO, so she and her team are able to oversee the units from outside of their own direct control. In terms of clean audit reports, the target was to maintain unqualified audit opinion. We have maintained the unqualified, however, we have matters that we have to deal with. Operating costs as percentage of revenue, we have achieved that. The gross profit margin, we have achieved that and exceeded it. The target was 27.8 and we have performed at 44%. In terms of maintaining a positive working capital ratio, the minus there shows as if we have regressed. However, I should mention that the target of 10.1 is actually higher compared to how you would normally set. You do a 2-to-1 ratio. In terms of the inventory turnover ratio, we have achieved. The number of SLAs that we're meant to conclude with our customers as well as the suppliers, we have achieved. In terms of return of on capital investment, we have exceeded the target. And the last one on completed construction of secure facilities with Pavilion 3, the target was 30% and we achieved 26.8%. And this relates to some of the things that the construction company found as they were building or in the progress of construction. There were things that were not planned or they were not foreseen that they picked up, which delayed the construction. However, it's a margin that we believe we can make sure we reach what we need to, so it shouldn't affect what we had planned to be done for this financial year. With regard to HR chair, revised job description, job evaluation, we have achieved. Filling of posts according to HR plan, we have achieved. And in the last 3 months, we have employed, I think, just over 10 people. So that on its own will assist in making sure the vacancy rate is reduced. Conducting skills assessment, we have achieved. Ensuring that our staff go through training that will enhance their performance, we have achieved that, Chair. And the last one related to determining absenteeism baseline per unit. And through HR and the members of VEXTO, we have made sure that the way you have high level of absenteeism, we work with the workforce and ensure that we address that for it not to affect production targets. The next slide, Chair, just shows a summary that out of the 26 targets, we achieved 23, which is 88%, and the ones that we did not achieve relates to branch strategic management and finance. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, and honorable members, we have heard the story of GPW. Clear, straightforward, and it's the one entity that almost nothing changes in it. And then probably what may change may be our attitude towards it. So this time I'm starting from the other side, and then Honorable Ficklin, do you have anything to raise with GPW? Do so.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the presenter. No, it's just simple question, Chair. The one question that I have, why has the total number of pages of printed e-gazette not declined since the introduction of the e-gazette in 2012? The second one, is there any development in promoting GPW to other countries like in Africa? Or are you happy making a profit in the domestic to see if this is less priority? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Hussein.
Chair, thank you. I just have one question. Unless I missed it, what are the the details around the 32 million rand irregular expenditure. That's the only question I have, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, the first issue is the issue of human capacity, resources and capacity, and their development. In this case, as they are going to, they are most probably employing their competition or their potential competition or their future competition. Are there any plans to try and avoid that, because that is very risky? Competition may be hostile and or destroy you and in one way or the other. Added to that, this is a security department. We've got to prioritize security, and it has to be at a strategic level rather than at an operational level. But it seems that it is at an operational level, and given the risks, I think we've got to facilitate the issue of security and make sure that we've got better security. But that is the way I see it from where I sit. I would be interested to hear from you what are your plans in as far as that is concerned. And lastly, there is this issue of the forthcoming state printers bill, which is going to change the ownership structure of GPW because of scarce resources and capacities. But given that, are you having any transitional measures put in place and plans put in place to move away from where you totally depend on government and to where you depend on yourselves as a department? Thank you.
Thank you very much. If you can go to page 21. I think we just need to be very clear. Like as we have said to the IEC, if you have got a procurement system that says you need 3 quotations, you must stick to it. Unless otherwise you revise it. You can't rely on the fact that you'll explain to people, you'll argue with people. You know is that the departments or any state organs, when you are pitched against the Auditor General, you are always going to lose that fight. Because the Auditor General, we actually rely on them for assurance that you are doing the right thing. Now, if you argue with them, don't think that you'll win the deal. You'll win the argument. You'll not. So, instead of relying on arguments that you'll argue with them and then you'll debate with them, you'll go and get some legal whatever. But I'm not saying that you must not get some legal opinions. You can get it to actually facilitate your engagement with them and understand their reasoning and understand how you have done things. And then when they say, no, we are not agreeing, know that if you continue to argue with them, you are not going to win the fight. Because society and public will tend to believe the Auditor General than believing you. Will tend to believe the court than believing the people that are brought in front of the court. Will tend to believe the public protector instead of believing you that are being subjected to public protest. So it is a thing that you must, you know, you must approach it very carefully. Don't start a fight if you have already lost the fight right from the start. Don't start it. And if you view that you are going to lose the fight, don't even start it. And that's more or less just what I just wanted to say, that deal with your preferential point systems, your uncompetitive bidding, deal with it, and then if you have to verify, as we have said with the IEC, make sure that your internal audit, if it is there, it's functional. It's a functional animal. If it is not a functional animal, it is not independent, reasonably independent, it is not going to assist you. It only helps you in spending your salary bill. But then it is not adding value in your processes. Then you have to find yourself here now having to justify why all these things and have endless meetings with the Auditor General, you know. But if that internal audit is working, you won't have any reason to justify and explain yourself. You'll just sail through Parliament. You just sail through. The Auditor General comes in there and then gets out, is happy. But if we don't do the right things and thinking that we'll reason with them, then we'll have these endless hours of grilling and uncomfortable meetings, and which may not assist us. On page 23, because disabled people, I think they are provided in some other policies, then they are not reflected, or whether they are hidden in these numbers. But surely one should sometimes, you know, indicate whether you have got disabled persons, the 2% that has been mooted in some other policy document, which of course maybe should argue for 5% nowadays, because the population is rising a lot, and then that percentage remains stagnant at 2% for persons with disability. You have not said anything, and then, but not now. In the next report, and then we must really get some sort of an indication on that. And then the question on the performance, of course, is that what Honorable Gumede has raised in terms of the security risk management system. We have failed to do that. And then the next thing is that our costs, the other side, and then looks like we have saved our operational costs. Then it reflects some sort of a reasonable gross profit. But I'm just deducting that the cost that we would have spent in implementing the security risk management would have reduced your operational, would have increased your operational costs. Therefore, your gross profit that we may celebrate, it is actually hiding non-competence on the security risk. Yes, we have got a better profit, but at the cost of risk implementation. If you are ready, then you can speak to the issues raised, and you can share with those that are knows better as well on items that they may be having more clarity. Continue.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will speak to the issue relating to SOC and the Security Printers Bill, as well as the what we term the Africa Strategy, and the CFO will speak to issues relating to the irregular expenditure and what has brought us where we are. Chair, just to mention that the government printing work started, I think, about 2 years ago to work on the bill that will facilitate GPW in being an SOC, state-owned company. And the motivations that had been put forward were linked to issues of governance, that being a state-owned company will then give GPW an opportunity to have a board that will strengthen the governance framework. Currently, you know that the CEO reports to the minister, but there has not been a governance structure that provides, that does oversight, except through the Department of Home Affairs. The second issue that was raised was the attracting competitive skills, or what is termed critical skills. The question that was asked, that most of the GPW artisans, they use GPW as almost a training ground. So they are in GPW, gain all the skills, and there are two competitors that take those skilled personnel, that is UNISA and the South African Banknote. And the motivation has been that the government salary scale at those skill level is extremely low. And because the two institutions are able to provide them more than what GPW does. So if we go to a state-owned company, we would obviously benchmark ourselves against other printers in the country and other state-owned companies which are security printers outside of South Africa, so are able to give a competitive salary. So they should be able to deal with the amount of fluidity we've been having in terms of vacancies or losing critical skills. Honorable Chair, I should mention that currently our chief artisan, who is very critical to the work of production, we have loaned him from Banknote. He was the only one that was available that we had to ask Banknote to share him. They wouldn't let him go because they only have one. We also needed that person in order to make sure that we meet our targets. So currently we have an SLA. Obviously, it's a situation that we should not allow that it continues. We have had discussions with both the Printing SA in the country and PCTA to make sure that we begin a partnership in building artisans that they train, that we provide them with an opportunity to gain the experience, and we can retain some of those artisans, because generally in the country there's a shortage of artisans. So we have that partnership that we are finalizing now. Secondly, is that we ourselves have identified about 25 areas, skill areas within GPW that we are inviting graduates over and above the partnership program. Graduates that we will bring in for 18 to 24 months that we can build our own capacity. We know that once we have trained them, we will lose them to the market, but a certain percentage can be retained within GPW. So that should be able to assist us to deal with the current human capital challenges that we are having. The SOC will also assist us to make sure that we are able to pay them outside of what currently the government levels are. The other issue that motivated the SOC was the issue of owning assets. Currently, all the assets at GPW, or at least 90% of them, are owned by Public Works, which means we spend billions of money out of GPW's financial statement, but they cannot be recorded because the property doesn't belong to GPW. So the issue about you are spending but you can't show what you are spending on because it belongs in another department statement, it's something that the SOC will assist us, because the minute the SOC is approved, all the assets will then belong to SOC as a state-owned company. In terms of the security printers bill, that bill, what it will do, Chair, it will assist us to regulate and manage better the security printing environment. At the moment, the state does not have a tool that can differentiate between a high-level state document, a non-security document. At the moment, departments will send anything, whether it's a security document or not, to private printers. So what we are doing through the Security Printers Bill is to ensure that there is a control council that can, which is multi-departmental, that can identify what is regarded state security document, and those are the documents that, in our view, it should allow us, as government printing works, as the state security printer, to print those, which means the non-security documents will then be allowed so that the market, the private sector market, is able to continue to print. So we are not monopolizing the printing industry. What we are doing is making sure the separation within the state with regard to security printing. It also will address some of the issues that were raised about what are we doing about security as government printing works. With regard to whether we are planning to attract the work from other countries out of South Africa, definitely yes, Honourable Member. We have had engagements with DICO, and we are currently working on our own Africa strategy in terms of how do we package our services and sell them to our neighbouring countries. So DICO has told us that they are definitely going to support us through the current structures that exist, to make sure that we are able to do passports of Botswana, Lesotho, and other countries around us. Honourable Chair, in the last week we attended a conference in Spain, which were all the security printers in the world gathering together. And to our surprise, South Africa was the only country that has got a state security printer. All the countries are exporting or importing from UK, Switzerland, Germany, and Malaysia. So we do think that once these processes have gone through GPW, through its Africa strategy, we should be able to go to the different regions. And in line with the AU targets, that Africa can print passports. And GPW is here, South Africa is able to provide these services even at a cheaper rate than they would be paying now because of the export cost that they have to pay. So we're definitely working on that strategy, and we will be happy to be invited back to come and share that strategy with yourself, Honourable Members. I'm going to hand over to the CFO to deal with issues relating to irregular expenditure. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I will deal with one or two of the issues regarding irregular expenditure, maybe in a little bit more detail than others. But just as an overarching statement to start off with, when we converted to a government component in 2009, we started developing a supply chain framework and policy in line with, obviously, laws and regulations. And that we've done in conjunction with National Treasury, in order to get to a state where we got a framework for a national government component. As you know, we were the first government component that was established according to the process and according to law. So it was a new kid on the block, if I may refer to that. Now, National Treasury has approved, it took us a couple of years, about 3 years, in order to get the final version of that framework and policy. National Treasury has approved our framework and policy, and we work according to that policy. Now, coming back to the irregular expenditure per se, none of these issues that were raised by the Auditor General, I think there were a lot of, lots of them that refers to maybe to interpretation. There's one or two things that we did do wrong, and we'll admit to those. But none of the other ones, there was none of them that were fruitless or wasteless, wasteful expenditure, or that we didn't get any value out of those contracts. And the big one out of this irregular expenditure of 32 million refers to what the CEO has said about the awarding of a contract for Pavilion 3. Now, this is an interpretation of law issue, and it refers to the Provincial Procurement Act, and specifically clauses 11.8 and 11.9. Now, 11.8 refers to pre-award, and 11.9 refers to post-award. Now, in this specific circumstances, when the evaluation committee looked at these specific bids, in this case, the contractor, in our view, interpreted a specific question incorrectly, provided an answer, but below the answer then provided a clarifying statement. And we took that into account as well as the rest of the information that was provided in the rest of the bid documents. We even tested this with legal people, and according to us, we interpreted the law correctly. Now, as you said, that we don't want to get into at all a first fight with the AG. That's not what our intention is. Our intention is that, and we've already engaged, like the CEO said, numerous times now with National Treasury. So we need to have these things clarified and condoned, and that's what the process that we're busy with. In most of these cases, there's not a thing where we need to do an investigation and in terms of the PFMA, look at section 16 or chapter 16. It's an engagement that we need to have so that we can get clarity between ourselves, National Treasury, and the AG, and be busy with that process. We've already provided documents, detailed documents, to National Treasury. We had follow-up meetings with those, and we will continue to do so because at the end of the day, we had to disclose this in the annual financial statements as irregular expenditure, and we need to get that condoned. Like the CEO said, this specific one is running on a number of years, including the current financial years, so we need to have rectified that. There are one or two other instances where there's also interpretation of law and specifically Treasury Regulations 16A64, where we had specific circumstances in GPW. We need to remember that we are an organization that is a trading entity. There's sometimes things that we need to do on an urgent basis. But like the CEO said, the previous CEO did sign off on all these submissions. It wasn't that somebody did somewhere something underhandedly. But like I said, we're engaging with the AG. I'll just address one other issue, if you might permit me. It's the issue of the government gazettes, the pages. The statistics that we show refers to the number of pages published. It doesn't refer to the number of pages printed. So we tried over the years. We launched the e-gazette system in 2012 with the output side of it. And since then, we went live last year, March 2015, with the implementation of electronic system in order to process gazettes, or the input in order to produce the gazette. That we've done successfully, and the 167,000 pages in the last financial year refers to the numbers of pages published, not printed. So we're reducing substantially. We're getting to a model where we're going to publish or print gazettes on a cost recovery basis, but when you download the electronic version from the web, it will be free of charge. And that's the model that we've been working on with National Treasury at the moment. Just on the gazettes, maybe an interesting fact is that since we introduced the electronic system, we've reduced on average the price per page to be published by about 66% in 1st of April this year, which is, I think, a major achievement for the GPW, that we've reduced the cost for people to publish, whether it's government or the private sector, that we reduced the cost associated with publishing the gazette. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Amos.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I think, honourable members, we received the responses. And is there anyone that wants to make a follow-up? You're not making a follow-up.
No.
You're just continuing the response. Just proceed.
Apologies, Chair and honourable members. There was this one issue about sustainability that we haven't addressed. GPW hasn't received any transfer from the fiscus since the 2011-2012 financial year. We're self-sustainable. And the majority of the transfers that we received between 2009 and 2012 was to do in order to facilitate the procurement of the passport system. So we haven't received, in fact, there were, if you look at the MTF 3-4 years ago, there were still plans to transfer money to the GPW up to 2016. We have agreed with Treasury in 2012 to stop that. So the last transfer actually happened in April 2011.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Those
I'm sorry, I just need to try and understand something on this issue of irregular expenditure. I mean, I understand that it's an interpretation of law matter, but what is it specifically about? Is it, was it a single transaction or a number of transactions? Is it because you bought suites or what? Just trying to figure out exactly what it is. Thanks, Chair.
And then also, if you look on page 5 of your presentation, on the right-hand side, you have got values there, liability, integrity, accuracy, stakeholder satisfaction. Now, those very things that Hussein is asking, irregular expenditure and this confusion about interpretation of laws, which values are they actually tampering with them?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just a response on the values is that the issues relating to risk management on our image or reputation that were raised, if one were to put it this way, that in terms of the values, we have not gone away from any of them, Chair. In terms of reliability, we have made sure that whatever production of travel document, IDs, gazettes needs to happen, does happen. The issue around integrity, we do think that this issue of the triple BEE issue raised by the Auditor General has potential to impact on our integrity and the current reliability that people have and the standing of GPW. Therefore, that's why for us it's something that needs to be sorted out. However, what we have in our discussion with the AG was that on the one hand, there's an issue of a reputational image risk. On the other hand, there's an issue of legal mandate. When the CFO explains the specific issues that Honorable Member has asked, you realize that in some cases where there were emergencies that affected the production flow, so if we did not come in and treat it as an emergency, it was going to affect our production. So we have to weigh between do we delay because we are looking for three codes, or do we invoke sections within the PFMA that assist us to procure within the law, which in this case we have found the AG has not agreed with all of us. But maybe I'll allow the CFO to maybe take each point and explain those different transactions and how we have dealt with them.
Thank you, Chair, and all members. I will focus mainly on the one big issue of roughly about 25 million of the 32 million that was regarded as irregular by the Auditor General. The case in point here is that if you go to the Provincial Procurement Act and you go specifically to clause 11 subclause 8, it talks about pre-award I'm just going to read what it says briefly. A person must not be awarded points for triple BEE status level if it's indicated in the tender documents that such a tenderer intends subcontracting more than 25% of the value of the contract to any other enterprise that does not qualify for at least the points that such an enterprise tenderer qualifies for, unless the intended subcontractor is an exempted micro-enterprise that has the capability and ability to execute the subcontract. So here we talk about intent. So it is a pre-award if there's an indication or intent by the bidder to subcontract more than 25%. Now, 11.9 states the following. A person awarded a contract may not subcontract more than 25% of the value to any other enterprise that does not have an equal or higher triple BEE status level than the person concerned, unless the contract is a subcontractor to exempt micro enterprise that has the capability and ability to execute the subcontract. So this is post-award. In our evaluation, when we went through the evaluation, there was a question asked in the SPD 6.1 to the bidder as to what percentage of the contract will be subcontracted. they put there in hand, in normal handwriting, 60%. Underneath that, they put the following. Not more than 10% of the contract value will be allocated to any one contractor. So what I was saying was that although they put the 60%, which is obviously more than the 25, they put a qualifying statement there. Then if you went through the rest of the bid documents, and even there was a sheet attached to it which indicated what kind of works would be subcontracted to whom, according to their bid documents. None of those documents indicated the 60%, and in fact it indicated less than the 25. On that basis, and obviously there were some things that had to be clarified with the various bidders, this was then accepted that there was actually a misrepresentation, if I may call that. Now, the Auditor General is relying on 11.8, the pre-award. The Auditor General is saying we should have verified. Now, our problem is, how do you verify a proposal? Because the proposal, although this contractor or the bidder then won the contract, that the contract was derived from the bid documents, exactly like that. So whatever it was stated in the proposal was then encapsulated into the contract. So even that schedule with all the subcontractors, and in total, there's various subcontractors, if you know a building contract. In total, the total is not even 25% of all the subcontractors. So this is where we get into the interpretation of law. And our legal opinion, we responded, and I can show you, we responded to the AG's query. It's basically four pages of response that we provided them. But I think, like in the ISE's case, we got the management letter on the 8th of July, on the evening of the 8th of July, which didn't give us much time in order to engage with the AG before everything had to be finalized. And unfortunately, that was the case this year, which never happened in the previous years. So we had to disclose that as irregular, and we need to deal with that, like you said, Chair. But I just want to reiterate, we don't want to pick a fight with the AG. We're trying to engage through National Treasury, because in our opinion, and specifically my opinion, Treasury is the owner of the regulation. So Treasury knows what the intention was with that regulation, and they need to provide that clarity. As far as maybe I can mention one other one. We had a situation where our ICT department, and specifically our data center, is situated in Versailles Street. In one particular day, the cooling system has broken down, and it was a major problem. The data center temperature went up at one stage to 36 degrees, which is not acceptable in the ICT environment. We even went as far as to go to a supplier and bought two mobile units in order to cool the room down. We achieved that by getting it down to about 31 degrees. Now, everything in GPW, whether it's production of gazettes or any other production, is centered about that data center. So we can't allow a situation, and we saw that as a risk, a huge risk that had to be addressed immediately. Now, we need to also to remember that Versailles Street is a national key point, so you can't just allow any other supplier on there. There were motivations provided to the accounting officer to sign off on the urgent procurement of cooling systems, and that's exactly what we've done. The AG is saying, in terms of Treasury Regulation 16A64, that they don't agree with our motivation. And in our view, again, it's again an interpretation of law, because if there's an urgent situation, we don't think the AG can come and say, but at that point, we don't regard it as urgent. And we showed the statistics as to what would have been the outcome or what happened during that time. Our systems really suffered because of that temperature issue. So, again, like I said, we're engaging currently with Treasury and with the AG in order to find a resolution for this. But none of the irregular expenditure that were incurred in the financial year were, if I can say, with ill intent or malicious or any of those kind of things.
Yeah, I think we're getting towards the end, but I think there are comments that one should make. Is that if you know that your area is a key, is a national key point area, then your procurement systems must talk to that. You can't have a normal procurement system, then you say on the basis of being a national key point, then you must be allowed just simply to deviate left and right as you please. You really can't do that. Your procurement system then must talk to that situation that you can't allow everybody else to come and supply and do that. And of course, is that from the CEO then to say that, you know, it's you had an emergency or an urgent thing, then you had to actually break the law to make sure that you don't lose production. You know, it's you remind me of some other guy who's having a very big truck to move cargo from Joburg to Durban. And the truck then had almost about 5 million worth of cargo. But then the truck did not have a license, the truck. And the driver also did not have a license to move goods, just have a license to drive. Then the owner of the truck said, it's immaterial. They're going to give him a ticket of 1,000 rand for not having permit to move cargo. Then the truck, then I'll just get another 1,000 ticket for the truck not having a license. Driver, take the truck. I can pay that 2,000 rand as long as you have taken my 5 million worth of cargo to Durban. This is deciding on the basis of the value of the cargo is moving. He is prepared to pay fines for the license and all that, and actually gets the driver then to break the law, you see. So, agency or emergency, of course, we accept, but doesn't mean that he must break the laws. I don't think it means that. It just simply means that you must mobilize all your resources and then make sure that you do certain things in time than the normal way that you will do. But if it means breaking laws, then you are going to have anarchy. But like as I'm saying, is that let your procurement system talk to you the situation that pertains in your institution. If there will be, you think that there will be this kind of situations of agencies, provide in a procurement system that talks to that so that you are not found wanting when people comes in. And I think with that comment, then this should be bringing us to the end of our engagement with GPW. CEO, you want to say 1, 2, 3 sentences on your way out?
Thank you. Thanks, Honorable Chair. On our way out, we want to appreciate the opportunity to engage with the Portfolio Committee and reassure you that we, as a team sitting around here, are ESCO, and we'll definitely make sure that we address the concerns you have raised. I do, however, want to clarify that in terms of the issues of emergency, the interpretation of breaking the law, I think, was not what we meant. What we meant is that the law in the PFMA says go 3 courts, but the same PFMA does give you the opportunity in cases where you do need to use the same PFMA to go deviation. And in this case, GPW did get approval from the accounting officer, which is within the law. Thank you so much, Chair.
No, it is fine. It is fine. But remember that the reasons that you are going to have to deviate, you know, you're not going to have the same meaning of those reasons and the same veracity of those reasons. And the Auditor General is almost having an upper hand on you. And what you think is emergency, the Auditor General may not be an emergency. And then he's the one that must write an opinion about you, not yourself. So just watch out for those things. And we really thank your presence and the engagement. And we're not really saying that you must disappear now. You may disappear after 20 minutes. And there are some lunch prepared there before we engage Home Affairs. They will definitely need energy. and then they must have something to eat. And if there is treasury members here, then they must eat as well. And then, because it may not be nice after that. And thank you very much for the engagement. I think this interaction then came to the end. Honorable members and all in the house, I think we can indulge ourselves at the end of the room there. Thank you very much.
It's mine, yes, it's mine very much.